You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, since the pandemic started, we've seen a lot less of our casual friends, the people we run into, you know, every now and then or see when we're out and about. We'll talk about what those friendships do for us and why we're missing them so much. Now, the last 3 weeks in January were the deadliest of the entire pandemic. Since then, cases have dropped by about 40%, but in most parts of the country, your chances of contracting the virus are still extremely high. It's all complicated by variants of the coronavirus that have been found around the country. They're all more contagious, it looks like, and preliminary studies have found that some of them might be deadlier or make the vaccines a little less effective. Our next guest is a Wisconsin expert on infectious disease, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about COVID-19 and the virus that causes it? Have you gotten vaccinated yet? What do you want to know about what is and wasn't safe to do right now? Do you worry about the new coronavirus variants? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Mary Beth Graham is a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin and Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control for Frederick Hospital. She's an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist. Dr. Graham, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
Well, we saw January a very high death toll nationwide, but some good news, I think. It looks like our case numbers dropping around the country. What are you watching for those big picture numbers right now?
So if you do look at the numbers, they feel a lot different in the hospital right now. I will tell you that as compared to what they were in the late fall and during December. The goal that most people would like to see is we'd like to get back down to the 7-day positivity rate of somewhere of less than 5%. And to put that into perspective, when we were in November, late November, our percent positivity rate was around 38%. We had a peak after Thanksgiving where it was at 32%. We had another peak after Christmas. We were back up into the 30% range. But as of just this past week, we're down to 19.7%. So, I mean, this is great. The numbers have come down, but we still have a ways to go to get down to those goals of that definitely less than 10%, less than 5% would be the best.
Why do you think the numbers are going down? Was it just kind of a natural peak? Do you think we're being better now about our mask wearing and avoiding that indoor contact with people so much? What do you see driving at least that the trend in the right direction?
I think that this is all, a lot of it is incredibly multifactorial. I mean, you could look at the peak after Thanksgiving and the peak after Christmas and say, oh, well, this was due to people getting together, you know, lack of social distancing, travel, et cetera. But if you look at the run-up to that time from September up until early November, there was really a dramatic increase. And again, the question would be, was that, you know, there's probably multiple things with that. It's people going indoors more rather than being outdoors as much, where you could essentially see air handling is a little bit different. People back getting COVID fatigue, I think, potentially pays a part of it, you know, in terms of not wanting to remain isolated from other individuals. You can't look at one specific thing. Was it because of kids going back to school? No, you can't point to that because there a lot of kids stayed virtual and many schools that brought kids back did not see this. You look at college campuses, that was around that time. So potentially college campuses drove it early on. There are so many factors that go into the numbers that we see with regards to the spread and the number of cases. It's really very difficult to kind of break that down.
Talking to Dr. Mary Beth Graham from the Medical College of Wisconsin and Frederick Hospital, looking at the latest COVID-19 news and developments. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Graham, now here come the vaccines. I've seen some reporting saying, you know, when we see a number like 90% effective or whatever the number might be, in some ways, that's underselling the vaccine. Those effectiveness rates, and please correct me if I have this wrong, that's how much you avoid getting the disease at all. It also seems to, for those who get the disease, reduce its severity, its hospitalizations, its potential lethality. Do I have that right, first of all?
That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly right. The effectiveness, essentially, as we look at it, is the, if you'd say you, it's essentially 60%, if it's 60% effective, you've got a 60% greater chance of not getting disease if exposed to it than somebody who was not vaccinated. But there are other things with this. Even if you're not 100% effective, and there are very few things that are 100% effective, in terms of decreasing morbidity, mortality, those other symptoms. So in terms of a COVID infection, people who would get the COVID vaccine, in all likelihood, you may have people who are totally protected and not get it, younger individuals, but it doesn't 100% prevent that. People could still become infected but have absolutely no symptoms. And when we're looking at death tolls and the number of people, the way that COVID affects different groups, having that vaccine and decreasing that chance of the severe illness where somebody will end up in the hospital, end up in our ICUs, and potentially not making it is the real hope of having the vaccine. The vaccine isn't there to say COVID's going to go away. That's not what it's there for. It's there to truly decrease the impact of the disease on our communities.
Got a couple callers with questions related to vaccines. Ben starts us off in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hi. Try to follow my thinking here on this. There are approximately 25 million people in the United States who have had the virus and recovered from it. I have heard an expert say that having had the virus bestows somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 to 80% immunity for at least 3 months on the people who have recovered. Given that there is a bit of a crisis and time is of the essence in terms of getting vulnerable populations vaccinated, and given the fact that there are these variants that are coming up that the vaccines may not be as effective towards resisting, I'm just curious as to why there has not been the national impetus to place people who have had the disease and recovered from it lower on the priority list.
Okay, Ben, thanks for the call. A lot there. Dr. Graham, first of all, should Ben is saying maybe people who have had COVID-19 and recovered, they should be bumped down on the vaccine list. What's the thinking on that?
That actually is a really insightful question, and I appreciate that. As we go by CDC guidance, again, they've been very clear about setting up the tiers in terms of determining who gets it. Their recommendation was for people who had COVID to still get the vaccine if they fit in the specific tiers. So the issue is the healthcare professional, you know, in that tier one, even if they'd had it, there was potential benefit to get it again, because we're worried about, could we potentially bring it into the workplace? We don't want our patients becoming sick, nor do we want to deplete the workforce. So if we have many healthcare workers who are getting sick and leaving the workforce, then we're left without people to provide care. And the same as you go into the 1B, so the 1A and the 1B, I think that essentially by having those tiers of the 1A and the 1B, again, the people over 65, other people who are essential workers, other aspects of healthcare, that helps balance out that for people who had it before. The problem with having had COVID before is that it depends on how severe the infection was the first time. If somebody had a very, very mild infection the first time, there's a lot of literature out there that says typically antibodies will wane within about 3 months. If somebody had a more severe infection, those antibodies may last longer. So the other thing that's built into it is CDC does say on their website is if you have had COVID within the last 90 days, you could delay vaccination for 90 days until that 90-day period is up. So it's not that they are saying absolutely do it, but they do put it as a caveat. If you have had it, you can elect to delay vaccination for 90 days after your recovery from COVID.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the latest COVID-19 developments with Dr. Mary Beth Graham. She's a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin and medical director of infection prevention and control for Froedtert Hospital. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about any of these topics, the vaccines, the new variants, the changing numbers on COVID-19 over time? Do you have a personal experience having had COVID, having gotten vaccinated, or working in healthcare through all of this? 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk now with infectious disease expert Dr. Mary Beth Graham, Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control for Frederick Hospital. She's also with the Medical College of Wisconsin. She's helping us understand the latest COVID news, the vaccines, what we know about virus variants. We'll get to that in just a few moments. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Go back to your calls now. Pam is with us in Rhinelander. Pam, hi.
Hi. I'd like to know more about the COVID vaccination adverse event reporting system. I understand there's at least three databases, and that only one, the VAERS database, is being used.
Pam, thanks for the call. So what do we know about, Dr. Graham, about adverse reactions from the vaccines and how we keep track of those?
Well, one of the easiest ways to do it after you get it, there's a phone app that's called VSafe. So everybody who gets their vaccine is actually given a sheet so that they can go onto that website, document, put in their information, tell them when they got the vaccine. And then CDC shoots you a text message pretty much every single day for the first 7 days afterwards. And they do it at the 14th day after, and then they remind you when your next shot is. So I received my first vaccine on December the 31st, my second one on January 21st, and I used that system, and they asked questions in terms of side effects, et cetera, and they put on there that they could contact you. If somebody doesn't have access to that, yes, you can go to the VAERS website and put in information about side effects. So and the other way to do it, too, is to talk to your primary care physician, because it'd be good to put that in your medical record so that somebody knows for the future, you know, should they give you that vaccine again, et cetera. So, again, contacting your primary if you've had a significant reaction to the vaccine.
Thanks for that call. And big picture, I think over 100 million doses of vaccine given worldwide so far. Pretty rare adverse effects, it sounds like, or at least apart from maybe minor ones?
They're relatively minor. I mean, the more severe ones get reported in the news right away. But in general, it's mostly been local effects with pain around the arm, allergic reactions with swelling that can occur. Some people will get diarrhea, body aches, et cetera. But in general, the vast majority of people have some symptom afterward, but it's mild to moderate, which could last maybe 24 to 48 hours, and then those symptoms are gone.
Before we go back to our callers, I wanted to ask about the variants of this virus. Mutations occur with viruses, especially when there's zillions of them around the world now. Some we don't care about, but some seem to spread faster. And there are questions, you know, is one going to be more lethal to an individual who gets it? What do you have your eye on when it comes to these variants?
So the thing that's important to understand is that when any type of virus replicates or makes more of itself, there are changes in the genetic makeup of that virus, which essentially is a variant or a mutation. Some of those variations or mutations can make the virus what we would call less fit, and we would never know about those. So something can change with coronavirus that makes it such that that spike protein doesn't adhere as well to the cells in our body. We would never know about it. What we do find out about are the ones where there have been changes in the virus such that the virus essentially is more effective in terms of entering cells. Viruses can't do anything unless they enter some type of a cell, whether it's an animal cell or a human cell. They need to get into that cell to take over the machinery to make more of themselves. And so the most recent variants that they've talked about, the one that's mostly in the news, is the UK variant. It's the B1.1.7. What's interesting on that one is it appears that there is something that's happened in the genetic makeup of the virus so that the spike protein that it makes, and that's a protein that sits on the surface of the virus, that's what attaches when you breathe it in and it goes in. That's the part of the virus that attaches to specific receptors on the cells in your respiratory system. So there's something about the change that was made in the UK variant that makes that virus much more attractive to go and attach to those cells and then get into the cell. So what it changes is how infectious it is. You may read things about something called R0. So for every person who's infected, how many people will be in, for if I'm infected, how many people can I infect? So the R0, if we look at for coronavirus right now, is about for every person who's infected, you'll infect 2 to 2.5 people. For these variants, it seems like they infect more people. So it may be two and a half to three people. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. Take a moment. We're talking to Dr. Mary Beth Graham, Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control for Froedtert Hospital, also at the Medical College of Wisconsin, looking at some of the latest COVID-19 news. So, Dr. Graham, you're saying these variants could have a higher R value, replication value.
That R0. Yeah, I feel like a cat. I think I swallowed a hairball. Anyway, so I apologize.
We've all been there.
The virus has become much more easily transmissible. So again, rather than 1 to 2 people, it could be 1 to 3 people. The other viruses, the South African and the Brazilian virus, Brazilian variant, again, very similar to that in terms of that R0 is going to be higher. The thing though that is really interesting though is that the question of if that changes and makes it more infectious, will it also change the immunity that we are getting either from a prior infection or the immunity that we get from a vaccine to protect against it? Those are the big questions right now. And it seems that potentially those variants, it will affect the immunity that somebody has to those if they've had COVID before, so that they'd be more susceptible to get those, or if they had the vaccine. But it doesn't seem, at least at this point in time, to totally knock it out. So rather than that 90% efficacy, it may take something back down to possibly like a 50 to 60% efficacy, which is still quite good, you know, in terms of decreasing our ability to become ill with the virus. So it's not like, well, it's not going to work anymore.
Let's go back to our callers. Kristen is with us in Appleton. Kristen, hi.
Hi there. I'm calling to ask about vaccination recommendations in terms of pregnancy. There seems to be some different recommendations coming from different countries, and I'm just curious about that.
Good question, Kristen. Thanks. What do we know, Dr. Graham? Vaccinations for people who are pregnant.
So, again, that's a great question. As we look at it, there are, in the trials that were done with the vaccines, pregnant women were not included in the trials. Neither were children. So this is why they can't make a recommendation for children under the age of 16 or 18, because it's different between Pfizer and Moderna, or make a definitive recommendation. However, the mRNA vaccines that we have right now, they are really a safe vehicle. And the usually what is coming out and what the CDC says is that the provider should talk with the patient to see, you know, talk to them about the fact that it hasn't been studied. It does appear to be safe. We definitely don't usually recommend new vaccines, et cetera, in that first trimester, because that's always the tender time. But again, weighing those risks and benefits in terms of that risk of getting COVID during the course of pregnancy versus getting the vaccine. And so there's not an absolute recommendation to not get it, but it's also not, it's one of those, talk to the provider, find out exactly, you know, what you think, how you feel about it. Same with breastfeeding. Do you want to go forward with this? And I know that sounds wishy-washy, and I apologize for that. But again, in the absence of data or studies, you have to temper your recommendation that way.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller. JT is with us in Madison. JT, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. one quick or a couple quick questions here. If I decide to get the vaccine, I was wondering how long will the vaccine last, and will one vaccine last longer than the other? Will Moderna last longer than the Pfizer vaccine? And my second question would be, after being vaccinated, will there be enough vaccination for another round of vaccination, depending on where they're at with their numbers?
Got it, JT. Thanks for the call. So briefly, relative protection or time of protection from the different vaccines, and will second doses be available just in our last minute, Dr. Graham?
So Moderna and Pfizer equivalent to each other. They're both mRNA vaccines. Get whichever one that you have in your community. So one's not better than the other. With regards to availability, right now, it appears that the states are trying to make sure that the people who get the vaccine, that there will be vaccine available for the second shot for most people so that they can get it on the time that was recommended. That may change. I know that the CDC has talked about whether we can get more people vaccinated with the first shot and delay that second shot. However, that was not the way it was studied, so we're not sure yet. But again, that is something that is being looked at. The last one is, what if they make a new vaccine to cover one of the variants? Would you need a booster? Moderna is already working on a booster for some of the variants. I think Pfizer probably will be too. So that's going to be another question that comes up in terms of, do you get the initial series and then the booster, or will the vaccine actually change down the line? The newer vaccines that will be out probably in the next 2 months may be one and done. So those are different vaccines. They aren't mRNA vaccines. They're what are referred to as adenoviral vector vaccines. And one of them is a one-shot deal. The other one is a two-shot. So there will be a lot of options for vaccination to get that coverage for people across the country.
Dr. Graham, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you. I apologize for my little coughing fit.
That's okay. It even happens to the professionals. That was Dr. Mary Beth Graham, professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin and medical director of infection prevention and control for Frederick Hospital. She joined us for a look at the latest COVID-19 developments.